I'm Georgie Crawford. This is the Good Glow Podcast. Following a cancer diagnosis in my 30s, my goal is to inspire and empower people on their self-care journey. Through the conversations I have with my guests, we hope to do just that.
There is a plan, and believe that if you're at rock bottom and you're suffering, this is all part of your life, your tapestry. This is your story, and where you go next is what's crucial.
The love before was easy, but the love at my lowest was real.
We all know what makes us happy. We all know the life we dreamed about. And deep down, we all know what we're capable of if you only give yourself permission to do it.
I now live a healthy and fulfilled life where self-care is a top priority and every day is an opportunity to grow. This season, I'm so proud to say I've teamed up with Vichy. Vichy is an expert French pharmacy dermocosmetic brand. Doctor-founded Vichy has established the link between health and beauty and led the way in skincare innovation for 90 years. Powered by active ingredients, all product formulations are clinically proven, hypoallergenic and dermatologically tested for sensitive skin, making Vichy a pioneer in skin health science. Taking a holistic approach to skin health, Vichy is committed to provide safe and effective skincare routines for every skin type at every life stage. All Vichy products are available in local pharmacies nationwide. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Good Glow podcast. I was so looking forward to putting out this podcast with Dr. Libby Weaver. As you may know, I am studying to be a health coach and I'm really enjoying my course. A couple of months ago, Dr. Libby was a guest speaker and as I heard her speak, I was glued to every word and I just knew I had to find a way to ask her to be on my podcast. So I reached out to her. I didn't know if she'd write back, but she wrote back straight away and agreed to come on The Good Glow. I was so delighted. Dr. Libby is hugely successful. She's often referred to as a woman whisperer. She's done a TED talk. She's got multiple books. She is an absolute expert in her field. On this podcast, she's going to explain to us today why we should care more about ourselves. How we can quieten down that inner voice that's constantly tearing us down. You know, that voice that's so bad for our self-confidence, that keeps telling us that we're not doing enough and we're not good enough. Before I got sick, I was stressed for 12 years. I pushed myself to the limit day in and day out until everything fell apart. And I recently heard Jerry Hussey say that if we don't make time for our health, that someday we'll be forced to make time for our illness. And that's exactly what happened to me. I hope as you listen to this podcast with Dr. Libby, that you will realize that you are precious and you deserve the best. If you enjoyed my podcast with Jerry and Miriam Hussey, I know you'll enjoy this because I know too they're big fans of Dr. Libby and her message. So let's get into it and I hope you enjoy. If you do, please leave me a review and share this podcast with your friends. So Dr. Libby, thank you so much for your time today. I've been so excited for this conversation. I've been following your work. I watched your TED talk and I'm just so incredibly inspired by your work. So thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Georgie. Thank you so much for having me.
One of the things that strikes me about your work and your message is when you speak about women being all things to all people. And I think we are getting a little bit better of being aware of that we can't do it all. But where are you at with that theory now in 2021?
So, well, back in 2011, I wrote a book called Rushing Woman Syndrome, and I wrote that to describe what I was witnessing in so many of my female clients, and I feel like it's only gotten worse. So now that here we are in 2021, I am fascinated to understand, I guess, about the implications of living with a really constant and relentless output of stress hormones, because a lot of women have done that for, you know, decades now, really, and what that then happened, the way that then impacts on our health and the way that that then presents as symptoms in our body. And observing that, I guess, become more intense for a lot of women. And as you say, Georgie, absolutely, some people have become really good at going, I don't need to be all things to all people, but there are still plenty of women who feel like they do need to be. And so in my own work, I've wanted to take that conversation further, and rather than us feel like that stress is just out of our control and it's just how life is now, I've wanted to really look at that further and help people to see what actually leads them as individuals to create stress hormones, because some of that is from very real and genuine stress, and other aspects of that is we create it for ourselves because of how we think. So, but as far as stress goes, I think it's only intensified for people over the last decade.
Mm. And when people come to you and they say, I'm so stressed in work, and then I come home and I'm so stressed with the kids and there's so much housework, and then, you know, my friends are ringing, they want to go for a walk, and my family are on to me for barbecue on Saturday. What do you say to those people? Like, where do you begin?
So I think before we look, I guess, at the way we've constructed our lives, so many of us to be back to back and so incredibly full, I think before we sort of look at the task, let's look at the way we kind of think about those tasks. Because when you describe a life like that, some people get really excited and some people go, I wouldn't want my life any other way. A girlfriend of mine is exactly like that. When I say to her, tell me about your email, she's like, there's an opportunity in every email. She's just a real life enthusiast, and as busy or as chaotic as it gets, she just sort of, she's elevated by that. She's uplifted by that. Whereas a lot of people are really depleted by that. So I think it's really important to look at the way we look at a back-to-back kind of day and loads of responsibilities, with work responsibilities, household responsibilities, to our children, to our friends when we've been invited to go and socialize. Because right now, obviously more than ever, there is very real and genuine stress in the world, and there's very real and genuine stress in people's lives. However, there is also a huge amount of stress we create for ourselves because of how we think. And we forget that we get to choose how we think and the way we see things and the way we respond to things. So when we think that our stress comes from, you know, oh, that colleague or that neighbor or that family member or that situation, it's not actually the neighbor and the person and the situation or the family member. It's our response to them. And I'll give you a silly little example. You know what it's like when you walk through the kitchen and you see a pile of dirty dishes? Sometimes you look at that and you just think, oh, it's just dirty dishes. I hope an angel drops out of the sky and deals with that for me. And then other days you would walk past that exact same pile of dirty dishes and you will think, my entire life is falling apart. I just can't cope. Mm. It's all just too much. So my point is, the dishes are the same, but our response to them can be very different. And another example is running late. So nearly two years ago now, I wrote a book called The Invisible Load about the stress we carry that no one can see. And I ran focus groups to do research for that book. And for women aged between 35 and 45, two of the very common things that came out of those interviews that stressed women in that age group out was their to-do list and running late. Now, running late doesn't stress everybody out. So that's how I know it's not a genuine stress. We make it up. And there's no judgment here. Whether you get stressed about running late or not doesn't matter. I'm just want to use that as the example.
Yeah.
It's not running late in and of itself that stresses you out. Now, sure, some people might get stressed out about running late because they're on their way to a conference and they're really worried that they're going to miss out on what the first speaker has to say. So it can be a bit of FOMO, sure. But so often what stresses us out about running late is what we think the person who is going to be on the receiving end of our running late, we worry about what they're going to think of us. And we worry that they're going to see us in a way that is the opposite way to the way we want to be seen. So in other words, we perceive that they're going to be disapproving of us. And we make all of that up. So when we get stressed about, I've got to do the tasks and the dishes and the housework and the paid work and the children and then go to the barbecue, I think we need to discern and pull apart the difference between a really busy, full life that we on some level have chosen and that life leading us into overwhelm. Because when we go into overwhelm, it's really our thoughts that are making it that way, because we can have a really busy day and it can be incredibly fulfilling. It's how we see it, and our physical health has a huge amount to do with that, because obviously when we have great energy, we can handle almost anything.
You speak, and you've spoken about this in your TED talk and other talks that I've seen you do. You speak about, you use the word precious a lot when it comes to life and women. And I love that. And I see it popping up quite a bit for you. So could you just tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So a long, long time ago now, when I was first starting to work with people one-on-one to initially to help them with their nutrition and niggly health issues they had, I realized that me encouraging people to eat more nutritiously usually wouldn't be enough. It wouldn't stick. The person would sit there and say, I will do anything to be healthier. I will do anything to lose weight. I'll do anything to have better energy, whatever it was that they were focused on. And so when someone says, I'll do anything to achieve that or to have that, they believe themselves, like they think that that's true, but they actually won't do it, because humans will do more to avoid pain than they'll ever do to have pleasure. And so they think that, I'll use weight loss as the example. So when they sit there and say, I'll do anything to lose weight, they won't, because weight loss is their pleasure, and they're going to do more to avoid pain, as in emotional pain, before they're going to do before they will have their pleasure. So I saw that very early on, and it really hit me that if I could get people to be back in touch with how precious they actually are, they might treat themselves accordingly. So I brought it into my language, because if you knew who you truly are, you would be in awe of yourself. You would blow your mind if you really knew who you really are. And we, as humans, we wouldn't make half the choices we make if we lived even a little bit more in touch with that. So I started to, I guess, weave it into the way I educated and to the way I speak and into the books I write, in the hope that I love that it's resonated for you, in the hope that it would resonate for a handful of people to keep that in their mind, because we're born knowing we're precious. So we're all born knowing we're special, and yet no more special than anyone else. But we lose that. We lose touch with that, because we create meanings about who we are based on the looks on people's faces, things that they say, things that they don't say. And so we start to create this construction of ourselves about who we must be for them to speak to us like that, or for them to ignore us, or whatever it is. And in that construction of ourselves, I think we lose touch with what we're born knowing, which is that we're really precious. And I think we spend half our life trying to feel like that again. And I'm trying to fast track that for people by saying it, that life is precious and you are precious, and to treat yourselves accordingly.
I do corporate talks here in Ireland, and part of my corporate talk is just speaking about, you know, when I was in treatment and Pia was a tiny baby, so she'd sleep for 2 hours a day, and I'd sit in my back garden, and it was the first time that I really had time to reflect, time to think. And I realized that I really loved myself and I loved my life and I deserved to be here and I deserved, you know, the best things, the best food, the, you know, the best for me. So when you describe that, that's actually what I was going through. I was realizing that I was precious and I deserved to be here. So getting emotional just thinking about it, but it's so powerful for people to have those breakthroughs, isn't it?
And Georgie, for you to have that experience that is so confronting and so challenging, and to then have those moments where you're recognizing all of that, but then the gift of you is that you haven't just stayed there sitting in your backyard knowing that, because that would have been enough, but you're now sharing that through the work that you're doing. So it's like it wasn't just a gift. It's like this ripple effect now in the world because of the hardship you had to go through and overcome. But I really believe that part of illness is to strip away all the ridiculous stories we've created about ourselves and bring us back to truth. And that's what I feel like that's what you've just described.
Oh, wow. Thank you so much. And, you know, when we speak about life purpose and your work, I hope you don't mind me asking you a personal question, but do you wake up every day with that sense of purpose?
I wake up every day going, I feel so grateful to be alive. I just feel that it's the most ridiculous privilege to be here and to have this experience. I see that we are a soul in a human body. We get, it's like I call, that's why I call the body an earth suit. So I feel like we get to come here and have this extraordinary experience. And sometimes the experience is genuinely challenging. But even when it is genuinely challenging, there's always immense beauty that coexists with those challenges. It's just whatever our brain focuses on is usually what we experience. So yes, I wake up every morning very much in touch with the privilege that it is to be here and have life.
And if people are at rock bottom, what is your advice to people who just feel like there's no way out?
Curiosity is one of the best medicines on the planet, and I don't think we talk about it enough. So if you have an ounce of curiosity, even about the very, very painful place you might have found yourself in, if you can start to become curious about your physical health, about your physical structure, about the way the body is constructed, but also about the thoughts that you think. If you become curious to learn about all the thoughts you think that deprive yourself of happiness, you will start to see some of the crazy made-up stories you're telling yourself about yourself, which is so often what leads us to that rock bottom place. We usually dislike ourselves so much because we endlessly judge ourselves. I'll give you an example, just a silly example, but you could see how this can, you know, have a compounding effect. You can see how this example would have a ripple effect. So when someone says to me, oh, I ate too many chocolate biscuits, therefore I'm hopeless, I'm pathetic, I have no willpower, we're not actually taught to question our own thoughts. So after you say something like that to yourself, you don't sit there and go, is that actually true? You just carry on with your day. Often you don't even realize you've just judged yourself really harshly. But if that's the kind of language you use with yourself after you've had too many biscuits, then you'll judge yourself harshly about one of your relationships or your bank balance or the shape of your nose or your thighs or whatever you want to pick on. So there'll be endless harsh judgment across the day. And so once we start to train ourselves to question our thoughts, it's quite game changing because the first part of that sentence might be true. I ate too many chocolate biscuits, but the second part isn't true. The second part is the story you've made up about who you must be to have eaten those biscuits. So if you go, I ate too many chocolate biscuits, and then you pause and go, I wonder what led me to do that, you evoke that curiosity and you realize that, well, maybe you ate too many chocolate biscuits because it was time for afternoon tea and you wanted that at afternoon tea because you had an unsatisfactory lunch. So you think, well, I need to eat a better quality lunch or I need to pack myself a nutritious little bliss ball for a snack in the afternoon. So maybe that's the insight you get. Or when you say, I had too many chocolate biscuits, I wonder what led me to do that. You go, well, I had a meeting this afternoon and there's a colleague and they said something and it really hurt my feelings and I put on a brave face in the meeting, but I can see now I ate the biscuits because I was really sad. So next time I feel sad, I won't eat the biscuits because they didn't make me feel any better. So do you know what? You learn something.
Yes.
So when we're at rock bottom, it can be obviously for all sorts of highly individual reasons, but one of the contributing factors nearly always is awful, very harsh self-judgment. So starting to become aware of all the thoughts we think that deprive ourselves of happiness is a really great step to start to come out of that.
And is there any techniques that you could recommend for practicing self-love?
Yes. So the minute you notice a change in your state, so I wouldn't call it a change in mood. It's like a change in your state. So when you might go to the supermarket and Mrs. Smith is walking towards you, and let's say you know Mrs. Smith, and on this particular day she puts her head down and she walks past you and she doesn't say hello. In that moment, your unconscious mind instantly makes a decision about what that interaction or that lack of interaction meant. And most of us run an unconscious story there that Mrs. Smith doesn't like me, I've let Mrs. Smith down, she's angry with me, our kids are at school together, they probably had an argument and she thinks I'm the world's worst parent. In other words, you create some story about how Mrs. Smith is very disapproving of you. Now, that's one option. The other option your unconscious mind can make in that moment is to think, wow, Mrs. Smith looked like she had a lot, she had the weight of the world on her shoulders. I should bake her a cake, a nutritious cake, like a real food chocolate beetroot mud cake, and go around and check in with her and see if she's okay. Now, I kind of don't mind what a person does in that moment, but what I want people to see is the ripple effect that happens based on which way you go there. Because if you go to Mrs. Smith doesn't like me, I've let her down, if that's what you make up from Mrs. Smith not speaking to you in the supermarket, that's what you'll do with any interaction you find uncomfortable all day, every day. So you'll create that meaning a million times across the day. And then when you go home in the evening, whatever your vice is, that's when you'll overdo it. You'll have too many biscuits, you'll have too much wine, you'll have too much ice cream, whatever it is. But you won't understand, you'll just think, I have no willpower. No, no, it's because you've created a meaning that you're fill in the blank of whatever the awful word is. In other words, you've judged yourself really harshly all day. That's what leads us to find it. That's what leads us to find it so difficult, I think, to resist some of those not so nutritious things in the evening. Whereas if you went the other way with your in your mind and went, oh, Mrs. Smith looks like she's got the weight of the world on her shoulders, I'll check in with her. Because you're not focused on yourself, you're concerned about her welfare, you don't hurt yourself then with those choices. So one of the ways we can start to become aware of our thoughts and all the ways we deprive ourselves of happiness is to notice that change in our mood. Because when you leave the supermarket after an interaction like I've just described, you won't feel as uplifted when you're leaving the supermarket as when you got there. And so if you can just catch that and think, again, it's curiosity. I wonder what led me to feel like I want to eat a whole block of chocolate as I'm leaving the supermarket. Or I wonder what's led me to feel really irritated. I'm irritated even by all the traffic, and I'm irritated by the potholes in the road. And whereas on the way there, you were really calm and content. So you just bring curiosity to those shifts. And usually you'll start to see, oh, yeah, I made up this great big story about how I've let Mrs. Smith down when Mrs. Smith probably had a big pimple on her face and she didn't want anyone to see her.
Yeah.
I hope you're enjoying this podcast so far. We're about to get into stress and how we can get ourselves into that wonderful green zone that Dr. Libby speaks about. I'm really excited for you to hear the next part of this podcast. But first, I wanted to thank Vichy for supporting The Good Glow and tell you all about their new hero product, Mineral 89 Probiotic Serum. Recently, only through working with Vichy and speaking to their skincare experts, did I learn that stress can affect our skin and how it looks. And that's why maybe when I look back at those photos of myself 12 years ago, I say that I don't recognize myself. I was in fight or flight mode for 12 years, and that was directly affecting how I looked. So over the past few years, I've really learned about the importance of de-stressing and getting into that green zone. So what can we do for our skin? Well, Vichy's new Mineral 89 Probiotic Serum targets acutely stressed skin and supports the repair of skin barrier damage. I've been using Mineral 89 for months. Mineral 89 Probiotics is proven to visibly improve dullness, elasticity, stress lines, and overall radiance for the recharge of stressed skin needs. It's dermatologist tested, hypoallergenic, and fragrance free. It can be used every morning and night after cleansing your skin prior to your moisturizer. For a 20% Mars Pharmacy discount on Mineral 89 Skin Booster and Mineral 89 Probiotic Fraction Serum, use code GOODGLOW20 online only at mars.ie until November 30th. Now back to Dr. Libby. It's so fascinating, and I love the way you explain stress and compare to the red zone and the green zone, because that was the first time I'd ever heard it described like that. And I just found it like it was so clear. It was so clear to me exactly what you were talking about. So could you just tell my listeners a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So, and I love that that resonated for you. That's wonderful. So we have all sorts of different aspects to our nervous system, and I won't go into all the different versions of it, but to bring it this through to the red zone and the green zone, we essentially have a central nervous system, and that's under the control of our conscious thinking mind. So we get to choose what we do with the central nervous system. So I could stand here and do some squats. I can speak. I can stop speaking. I control all of that. It's all mediated through the central nervous system. But there's another part of our nervous system called the autonomic nervous system that we can't boss around. The listeners don't need to worry about the silly names. Just get the concepts behind this. So all you need to know about the autonomic nervous system is that you can't instruct it. You can't tell it what to do. And there are two branches to the autonomic nervous system: the sympathetic nervous system, which is what I call the red zone, and the parasympathetic nervous system, which is what I call the green zone. And the challenge for so many people in the way that we're now living our lives is that we live in sympathetic nervous system dominance. So we live with that red zone constantly switched on, spending very little, if any, time with the green zone switched on. So the red zone is that fight or flight response, and the green zone, the parasympathetic response, is responsible for rest, digestion, reproduction. It's the very calm arm of the nervous system. So there's no problem in going into the red zone. The trouble with our health comes when we get stuck there. And so much of what drives us into that red zone is essentially adrenaline. So when we want to spend less time in the red zone, we've got to look at all of the things that lead us as an individual to produce adrenaline. And your listeners might want to block their ears right now, because one of the main ones is caffeine. Unfortunately, caffeine leads in the body to make adrenaline. It's our perceptions of pressure and urgency. Now, I'm not denying for a second that there aren't things that aren't urgent. Of course there are. If you get a phone call from school and your child's been injured, that's urgent. You want to get there quickly. But what most of us do is we make what we do each day full of stress and pressure and urgency. And then the other thing that leads us to produce a lot of adrenaline these days is kind of what I described a moment ago, that perception of or worrying about the disapproval of others. And often that's quite unconscious. We won't even be aware that we're doing that. So my point being that so much of what drives us into the red zone these days is essentially psychological stress, which is why it's relentless, because not that long ago in human history, what led us to make adrenaline was a physical threat to our life, a tiger coming out of the jungle at us. So whereas now we're thankfully relatively safe, and it's the psychological stress. And so we tend to live in the red zone way too much, and we have to address, as I said, what leads us there with all the ways I just described. And then we also want to activate the green zone. And the only thing science currently knows that will activate the green zone, because remember, we can't instruct it, the only thing that will activate the green zone is for us to extend the length of our exhalation. So it's why all the breath focus practices have become incredibly popular. They need to be right now.
Wow. So we can go into the green zone by breathing.
Yes. It's because we can't. So if our heart's racing and we've got lots of adrenaline in our blood, the hypothalamus in our brain, the region of our brain that controls our whole endocrine system, all of our all of the hormones that our glands make, like our ovaries, our thyroid, our adrenals, when the hypothalamus looks into the blood and it sees adrenaline, the hypothalamus is always asking the question, am I safe? And when it sees all that adrenaline, the answer is instantly no. And so we start to breathe in a short, sharp, shallow way because we're producing all of that adrenaline. You can't just sit there and say, oh man, just my, you know, high body, just chill out. We're fine. All that adrenaline's there because I've had a few coffees this morning and I've got 400 unopened emails, you know, but just chill out. You can't instruct it with your thoughts. The only way that you can communicate to the autonomic nervous system and have any sort of influence over it is through how you breathe.
And is there any other way to go into the green zone? Is it a case of shutting off your phone? What else can we do? Or do we get into the green zone by breathing?
So you can go there straight away when you diaphragmatically breathe. So when you inhale through your nostrils and your belly expands, And then there's a little gentle pause at the end of the inhalation, and then you slowly exhale through your nostrils and your tummy shrinks back towards your spine. So when we breathe diaphragmatically, you've communicated to every cell in your body that you're safe. So that's the most effective way to activate that parasympathetic nervous system, because when it's adrenaline driving our breathing, it's short, sharp, shallow upper chest breaths. That's mm-hmm. what adrenaline makes us do. And it makes sense when you think that adrenaline was designed to help us escape from danger. So it's that diaphragmatic breathing that allows extending the length of the exhalation that really activates that green zone.
Do you practice that yourself?
Yeah, yes, I do. I got a job a long time ago now in a health retreat, and I had the crazy privilege of learning Tai Chi from a Tai Chi master. And he really taught me how to breathe properly, how to breathe diaphragmatically. And it had such a profound impact on my life. Back then, I very much thought that our body shape and size was down to the calorie equation, because I went to university for 14 years, which I know makes me sound really thick and like I failed everything or went to the pub too much. But I very much love learning, and I still do. So I originally studied nutrition and dietetics, and then did honours, and then did a PhD in biochemistry. And since then, I've worked with people one-on-one for over 20 years. So with that real sciencey kind of background, my education was very much that the calorie equation is what drives your body shape and size. And so because of that, and I was a slim person, but because of that education, I was a runner, and I would run, you know, long, at least an hour a day. And yeah, sure, I was slim, but then I got a job running a health retreat, and I had to leave home very early in the morning in the dark. And so I wasn't that obsessed with running that I was going to go running at 3 a.m. So I'd go to work, and my job was to teach the guests Tai Chi, which you don't burn a lot of calories when you do Tai Chi, but it's a moving meditation, obviously. You breathe diaphragmatically for the whole time. And then the next part of my day was to do a gentle walk with the guests who hadn't exercised for ages. And my eating remained the same across my pre-health retreat days and my early health retreat days. But my clothes started to get looser, and it completely fried my brain, because based on the way I'd been educated, the opposite was supposed to happen, because I was burning fewer calories. So it was actually that experience that led me to go back to my geeky biochemistry textbooks, that led me to ask the question, what leads the human body to get the message that it needs to burn fat, and what leads the human body to get the message that it needs to store fat? And I have put all the answers that I found into the first book I wrote, which was Accidentally Overweight, and I now deliver that in an online course. It's called Weight Loss for Women. Even though I don't focus on weight, I teach people how mm-hmm. to teach their body to use fat more effectively as a fuel from what I learned then. So from that experience of learning how to breathe from that Tai Chi master, I got the actual physical experience of what the way your own body can shift when you breathe like that consistently. So it's not about just dipping into diaphragmatic breathing when you do a yoga class 3 times a week. That's fantastic. But how do you breathe for all the other hours in the week? So I would say, to answer your question, do I do that? I did Tai Chi for 12 years. I don't do it anymore. But I would tell you that that experience taught me to become very breath aware. So that's what I try to encourage people to do now with their health, is to become really breath aware, so that, you know, there are times when we need the short, sharp, shallow adrenaline-based breathing. You know, if a car drives out in front of you, that's how you're going to breathe, to slam on your brakes. But when we're sitting at our desk, when we're playing with children, when we're cooking dinner, whatever it is, you don't need to breathe in that short, sharp, shallow way. You can breathe diaphragmatically. So it's great to retrain yourself to be in touch with that, so that you can drop back down into it when you come out of it.
Yeah, I love that, because every couple of months I try to take on a new healthy habit. So in the summer it was swimming in the sea, last October it was cold showers, and I've been looking around for a new healthy habit. So I think this is a really good place to start, and just to become more aware, like you said, you know, when you're chopping vegetables at the kitchen counter, just to become aware of how you're breathing can have such an impact on your day.
It really can. And exactly those rituals, Georgie, too. So when you're chopping vegetables, when you're stuck at red traffic lights, don't check your phone. Remind yourself, this is, you know, I diaphragmatically breathe when I'm at red traffic lights.
Yeah.
Or if you work at a computer, we can see the clock, you can see the time. So every hour on the hour, you do 20 long, slow breaths. So it's about creating rituals in your day that lead you to check in with yourself to see if you're diaphragmatically breathing.
When it comes to stress, do you think it's possible to be in the red zone for a number of years?
Yes.
Yes.
Very much so. So yes, that's what I call sympathetic nervous system dominance. So you'll drop into the green zone maybe when you're sleeping, but a lot of people who live constantly in the red zone don't sleep properly because of that constant relentless output of adrenaline. And adrenaline says your life's in danger. It doesn't want you to sleep deeply or restoratively because it thinks your life's in danger. So one of adrenaline's jobs is to keep you ever so slightly awake so that you can defend yourself if there really was a threat. So for a lot of people living in the red zone year after year, they haven't slept properly in years. So because I was sort of going to say, well, you'll go into the green zone when you're asleep, but a lot of people haven't slept properly for a long time. So to answer your question, yes, you can be in the red zone for a very, very long time. And you don't necessarily know that you're there, but your health eventually, or your body and symptoms you experience usually eventually lets you know that that's what's been going on. And I've met thousands of women over the years, and men go there too, of course, where they don't know where to start with their health because they feel like there's a lot going wrong. So they might have problems with their digestive system, like irritable bowel syndrome or reflux. They might have problems with their thyroid, or they read an article about the thyroid and think, oh yeah, that's definitely me. Or they'll read about the adrenal glands and think, oh, I need adrenal support. So after you've been in the red zone for many years, you sometimes feel like you don't know where to start because you feel like there's something kind of all the body systems need support.
But the important thing to know is that you can catch yourself before it turns, say, I was speaking to a psychologist here in Ireland just about crisis mode and chronic mode. So, you know, the red zone is like chronic mode. And then if something sudden happens, it's crisis mode, like a cancer, you know, a disease. But you can catch yourself if you feel like you're in the red zone. And if you feel like you've been there for years and years, there is a way out.
Absolutely. Georgie, of course. So the first thing is to start to look at what leads you into the red zone. So, and it's adrenaline. So you want to start to decrease all the things that lead you to make adrenaline. So caffeine, start to explore your perceptions of pressure and urgency and save it for when you really need it. Start to consider that when you get really stressed about things like running late, as I used as an example in the beginning, pause and think, okay, am I worrying that someone is going to see me in a disapproving way? So start to look at all the things that lead you to produce adrenaline and do what you can to decrease that. And then massively focus on upping your green zone. So activating that green zone, which is extending the length of the exhalation. So become breath aware, embrace some kind of breath focus practice, Tai Chi, meditation, yoga, restorative yoga. There's a beautiful practice I love called stillness through movement. So any breath focused practice, and then but become breath aware across your day in all the ways we've talked about as we've been chatting. So they're some of the early things you can do to really start to come out of the red zone. Also remember that the adrenal glands, where we make our stress hormones from, they need certain nutrients to work at their best. So they need B vitamins, vitamin C, magnesium. They're the big guns for the adrenals. And then there are also some beautiful medicinal herbs that can be fantastic for adrenal health. They need to be prescribed for you individually because it depends on where you're at in your stress response, as in how long you've really been in that red zone. So, but some very common medicinal herbs I would use in that situation are things like withania. A lot of people know that as ashwagandha. The ginseng family is beautiful. So Siberian ginseng, rhodiola. So there are some really lovely herbs that support the adrenals when people have been living with that red zone switched on for a long time.
Brilliant. And final question, Dr. Libby, just if people want to know more about that green zone, red zone, what they can do, which one of your books would you recommend for that?
That one is Rushing Woman Syndrome. So okay. I think that goes into detail about the green zone and the red zone. And then I've expanded on that with some of the things I've talked about in our time together with the way that we think that's in the invisible load.
Oh, thank you so much for your time. I learned so much. I really enjoyed connecting with you today. It was just amazing.
Oh, I loved it too, Georgie. And thank you so much for everything that you share, and the way that you care really comes through in the way that you speak. And it was very special to have this time with you too. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Good Glow podcast. Our live show is going ahead on Tuesday, November 2nd. We are so excited. It starts at 8 o'clock. And over the next couple of days, a few tickets may pop up there. So you can check out nch.ie for more. And I hope to see you there on the night. Thanks for listening to the Good Glow today. If you enjoyed it, please rate and review. And I'll chat to you next week.